Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, October. Yeah, it's October, right? October 7th, 2015. And you'd think I'd know that considering it's only been like a week worth of shows.
Oh, wait, really? It's 2015?
It's October? It's Wednesday?
Why do I have you guys on the show time and again?
You just know there's going to be a riot.
For your entertainment, that's why.
That's it. It's for my entertainment. So here to entertain me today, ladies and gentlemen, Kelly Gumont.
Hi.
Also.
Hey, everybody. Now I have the giggles. I'm sorry.
Well, now I'm entertained. Also for my entertainment, John Martellaro.
For your eyes only.
See, this is like the best show ever because I have laughing, I have singing. This is like a 1970s variety show.
Oh my gosh, if only we were divorced.
If only. But then people would talk.
No, that's true.
Anyhow, we have a sponsor this week, and that sponsor is Downcast, the really cool podcasting app for iOS and OS X. I will be talking about them in just a bit, but before we get there, I want to talk about Wi-Fi calling on the iPhone. And the reason I want to talk about that is because AT&T just announced that they have been granted a special waiver from the FCC to enable Wi-Fi calling.
Now, why do they need a waiver?
Why haven't they done it?
Actually, that's a really good question. And the reason they haven't done it before is because FCC regulations are very strict about using TTY machines, which are the the teletype machines that you use when you have some sort of hearing impairment, where using a telephone in the regular way, you hold it up to your ear and talk, simply doesn't work. So then you can have this machine, you type into it, and then you can communicate with people over the phone that way. Now, So the problem is that that TTY systems don't work very well over, or at least that protocol doesn't work well over Wi-Fi right now. So if you want to enable Wi-Fi calling, which could potentially limit someone's ability who's using a TTY system to be able to talk with you, you have to get a special waiver.
Okay.
So the waiver part is a limited time thing, and so they'll have to reapply for it. But by the time they need to reapply for it, hopefully there will be the next generation TTY system, which is called real-time text, in place and working, and so they won't need waivers. But if so, they can get them. So what AT&T had to do was apply for a waiver so that they can allow for Wi-Fi calling. They got the approval for that waiver, and so as of
unlike now, Sprint and T-Mobile, who didn't, they jumped the gun.
Yeah, you just totally ruined my buildup. But whatever.
Sorry, Jeff. I'm smacking myself for you.
That just became a very different show.
I'm chastened.
Anyhow, so AT&T got their approval, so they can start the enabling of Wi-Fi calling for
all
iPhone
official-like
users, official-like, whenever they want. So it could happen anytime now. And they did enable it in a small area for some people that were using the iOS 9 beta during the beta phase so that they could do some testing. And now they can just do a nationwide thing, and that's great. Now, T-Mobile and Sprint, as John said, did not do this. T-Mobile, as soon as the iPhone supported Wi-Fi calling, they just turned it on. And so that means that they have been offering Wi-Fi calling for over a year now, and they never applied for the waiver that you need to have from the FCC. And Sprint, they turned on Wi-Fi calling without requesting a waiver as well. The FCC is now saying, hey, guys, you kind of need to apply for your waiver. Yeah. So on one hand, hey, T-Mobile and Sprint people could use Wi-Fi calling. On the other hand, hey, Sprint and T-Mobile, maybe you should consider complying with FCC regulations.
Yeah.
I was doing a little bit of reading about this. And I ran across a couple of forum commenters who said that, you know, you shouldn't be in that big a hurry because we're having some problems and it isn't as great as it sounds. So I can't wait to see what the quality of the call is compared to what we're accustomed to on microcells.
Well, from talking with a very small handful of people that have Wi-Fi calling enabled, they are really liking it. Now, keep in mind, my pool to work with is very small, just like a couple people. So having two or three people say, hey, yeah, this is working great for me, is not representative of all Wi-Fi calling users. But there you go. The people that I have encountered are really happy to have Wi-Fi calling.
You know, the question in my mind is how long you should keep your microcell if you have one afterwards. You know, as soon as you turn this on, do you decommission your microcell and throw it away? Or do you run both in concert? Do you keep your microcell as a backup? Because you can always, I think, switch back and forth.
Sure.
I don't have a microcell.
Yeah, so for you,
and
Kelly,
I still think this is going to be. Yeah, I still think this is going to be a useful feature for me because I do spend a fair amount of time in the basement area of my house, which is where the big screen TV is and things. And sometimes when I'm down here, for whatever reason, all of a sudden it will go down to one bar of service. I don't know what to call the new indicator on the iPhone. It switched to circles or something, and one circle just sounds goofy to me. So yeah. The one bar means that sometimes I'll be talking to somebody and my call will just drop. So having Wi-Fi where the router is just over there that gives me the Wi-Fi signal, which is obviously going to be a lot stronger than wherever the tower is in my area, is going to be really useful to me. Now, I don't have a miserable reception experience such that I have a microcell from AT&T, but this is the sort of thing that will come in and sort of boost the signal that I do have. So to me, this seems really kind of like a good thing, and I was really looking forward to it, and I have been really looking forward to it. So I'm glad to see that this is like the one case where AT&T being late to the party is actually to their benefit because they were going about this the right way.
There's a spectrum here, Kelly. I mean, you know, if there are people who just have poor signals in their homes and offices and they have a microcell, right. There are other people who have no problem at home but can benefit from a microcell. I mean, I benefit from Wi-Fi calling because right. Maybe they're at an office or a friend's house or a location where there's abundant Wi-Fi indoors and mm-hmm. The local cell tower isn't so great and they're not getting a really good signal. And so you're at a Starbucks, you know, somewhere within tall buildings and you don't get a good signal. And so now you can do Wi-Fi calling and everything's good. So there's really kind of a spectrum here. But one thing I wanted to note is for those people who have microcells, and I think there's plenty of them out there, is that it has a much larger footprint than your Wi-Fi. You can go. I can take my iPhone and I can walk up the street and still be on my microcell. I can be way back in the backyard and still be on it, through the walls and everything. But Wi-Fi, you know, it's pretty much, you know, in the house.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, my microcell mm-hmm. signal does reach farther than my Wi-Fi signal. And I'm surprised how far my Wi-Fi signal goes. But that said, I need to have one or the other. It's no secret to people that live in Boulder, Colorado, that it doesn't matter what cell service you have, your reception is going to be bad because we just don't have cell towers. So something like this is really important. Now, my plan is once Wi-Fi calling is enabled, I'm going to turn it on. And I'm just going to pull the power cord for my microcell and leave everything set up and intact so that mm-hmm. if for whatever reason I feel that Wi-Fi calling just isn't doing it for me in my office, I can just turn the microcell back on. And assuming Wi-Fi calling is great, then I'll wait whatever time frame I deem appropriate and then pull it out and stick the microcell in the closet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, you know, it could take the microcell up to 90 minutes to reactivate getting a GPS signal from the satellite. So, you know, plugging in, just unplugging and plugging back in isn't as easy as it sounds.
Well, in this case, it's going to be just pull the power cord out and let it
instead
sit.
Of dismantling entirely.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. This is Which just is, to make sure that the Wi-Fi calling is the thing that you're using.
Right, and then if I have to plug it back in, okay. Well, in my case, it usually takes like 5 minutes for my microcell to come up and be reconnected.
You know what I think mm-hmm. I might do? I think I might put my wife's phone on the microcell in the house as usual, which she's accustomed to, and then I will experiment with Wi-Fi calling and run them in parallel.
I think that's a great idea.
And see about the quality of the service and the range of the signal.
But how do you not connect to your microcell?
Well, I'll just switch to Wi-Fi calling on my phone.
And then it'll favor Wi-Fi calling over the microcell.
Right. Okay. And so we can test in parallel, and that'll be an interesting test. I might write that up.
I think you should write that up. Actually, I'm looking forward to your write-up. How does that sound?
Cool.
Awesome. All right. So listeners, I'm pretty sure right now no one has Wi-Fi calling enabled except for the people that were able to get it during iOS 9 beta.
So I think there were some test programs in LA and Chicago too. You didn't have to be a beta tester, I think.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. So if you're someone that has Wi-Fi calling available to you already, or when Wi-Fi calling is available to you, you want to let me know what you think of it, please do, because I'm always interested in how services and technology are working for everyone else. So shoot me a message, TMO Daily on Twitter, email observations@macobserver.com, or comments in the show notes, because I always love getting your feedback. And I'm going to be watching. I've already checked several times this morning to see if Wi-Fi calling is enabled for me. It is not. But I'll be watching close, and as soon as it's
so far,
oh, go ahead.
When
go
we
ahead.
Know, you know.
Well, so far the reason that the particular reason I've been looking forward to it so much is because a couple of times when I've had calls drop on iOS 9, you get the alert like, "Gosh, your call dropped. That was a real bummer. Do you want to use Wi-Fi calling?" And I'm like, oh, "I can do that." And then I go, and it's like, you know, go to settings and turn it on. And I'm like, I didn't know I could do this. This is going to be awesome. And then I get there and I go to the settings and I go to Wi-Fi calling and I hit the switch and my phone goes full Nelson on me because I can't do it.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
Now, if you want to experience that for yourself, all you have to do is go to settings, phone, Wi-Fi calling, and then turn Wi-Fi calling on. And just imagine Kelly giving you her Nelson.
I just had an epiphany about Kelly.
Oh, do tell, John.
Yes, I just noticed when Kelly was giggling a second ago. Kelly, you sound an awful lot like Rachel Maddow when she giggles.
I do?
Yes, you do.
Really?
I think so.
Huh. Well, it'd probably be more accurate to say Rachel Maddow sounds a little bit like Kelly when she
giggles. There you go.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor this
I will
week.
Never turn down. Before we get to the sponsor, I will never turn down a comparison to Rachel Maddow. So that's totally fine. So
awesome. Okay.
There you go.
Now we have a sponsor.
And yes, we do.
Our Let's sponsor is Downcast, the podcasting playback and management app for iOS, Apple Watch, and OS X. And what I love about these apps is that you can synchronize what you're listening to between devices. So you can start listening one place, pick up on another device, and just listen to your shows. Also, Apple Watch support. Thank you. Why doesn't Apple have that? And also, we got some questions from some of our listeners about compatibility with iOS 9 and OS 10 El Capitan, including one listener who said that they're having some really big problems getting Downcast to work right on El Capitan. So we went ahead and contacted the developers and said, what's up with that? And what they said is that they're aware of some problems with iOS, and they're aware of the issues with El Capitan. They are hard at work on updates even as we speak, and it looks like they will have their iOS 9 updates out next week, and then the following week, their OS 10 El Capitan updates will be out. And then everything should be great again. So that's totally awesome that they're really responsive like that. And I'm really happy. Now, I'm not having any problems in iOS 9 with Downcast. So I feel comfortable saying, hey, you know, go ahead and give it a shot. And bonus, it'll be even better next week when the new updates come out. And you can check it out yourself. Just go to downcast.fm/TDO. And what that does is let the Downcast people know that you heard about the app here, and it's also going to take you right to the iPhone app, so you don't have to go searching through the iTunes store to try and find it. It's only $2.99 and totally worth it. I am so happy that I dropped Apple's podcast app in favor of Downcast. And I'm really happy that they're sponsoring us this week, and that they were totally cool with giving me the lowdown so we knew when the new updates would be coming out. Thank you, Downcast. Check them out, downcast.fm/TDO. And hey, there's another thing that I wanted to take a look at today, and that's this whole thing that, John, you've been watching really closely, and it's all the Apple TV 4K stuff, and we know that the new Apple TV doesn't have 4K, but you found this other service that or protocol, is that the better way to describe it?
Let's see, infrastructure
like that.
Yeah, I've been following 4K and Apple TV very intensely. Probably written about more about that than I've written about anything else lately. And as you mentioned, Jeff, we know that the new fourth generation Apple TV does not have 4K support. And my understanding of the situation of that has gone through many levels over time. You know, at first, I thought that just about had to have 4K because Apple likes to generate excitement and build for the future and protect our investment and also work with the industry. That turned out not to be the case. So then I found out one reason why, and that's because there's an additional technology that rides along on 4K that makes it very exciting and easy to see, and you don't have to worry about how far away or how close you are, and it's called High Dynamic Range, HDR. And that's still kind of fractured in the industry, and it's a kind of an issue when it comes to 4K streaming, because there's metadata that has to be streamed along, and you have to figure out which technology you're going to support in your device. And so it turns out right now the state of the art is that if you want to do this kind of HDR, this technology version, then you have to buy this kind of device and so on. So there's certain TVs and certain devices that work with certain levels of HDR, and it's really kind of splintered. So maybe Apple felt like, well, we don't want to jump into this, but they still could have done just pure 4K streaming without any concession to that. And then I ran across this technology called Vidity. And what Vidity is, it's an industry effort from the secure, let's see, what is it? SCSSA, the Secure Content Storage Association, which is a consortium of hardware developers and content creators that allows you to acquire and view 4K content on just about any device. It's a software package you can download, and you can download it to your set-top box like your Amazon Fire or your Xbox. You can download it to your Mac or your PC. You can download it to your iPad. And you can, once you acquire this 4K content, you can view it on any of the devices on which the software is installed. And I take it there's encryption validation there, and you don't have to worry about logging on or having an account or authorizing it every time you try to fire it up. And it's a great way, and it even runs on your UHD Blu-ray player, so that if you buy the Blu-ray disc, the UHD Blu-ray disc, then you'll be able to watch the content easily anywhere else on other devices. So that's kind of an industry initiative to kind of take the sting out of how locked down the traditional high definition was, and encourage people to own content and move it around and be able to view it and still do it in a secure and authenticated way. It's called Vidity. So I've been writing about that.
Oh, sorry, John, didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did anyhow. Yeah. go ahead. Do you think that this is a technology or a platform that Apple will embrace?
I don't know. That's still unfolding. You know, you kind of get the feeling that Apple would like you... They would like to engage the content developers, the studios, to work through iTunes and then take the 30% cut. But just as Amazon found out, it's not a great idea to give up 30% to Apple. So if you can develop a platform, an infrastructure that people can download, an iOS app or an El Capitan app or something for your Xbox or your Amazon Fire TV, and you can just download this software, you know, then you can directly access the provider, and Apple is not in the picture, as Amazon did with its, you know, Kindle store.
Well,
so,
what if Apple licensed the technology?
Well, Apple's not a member of the SCSA, nor are they a member of the UHD Alliance, which is a consortium of companies like Dolby, LG, Netflix, Panasonic, Samsung, Sony, DirecTV Group, 20th Century Fox, Universal, Walt Disney, Warner Brothers, NVIDIA, Sharp. So Apple's not visible. They didn't include 4K in their device. They're not a member of any of these consortiums that I have found, and I'm still, you know, watching and puzzling and trying to see how this is going to unfold with Apple.
So I have two questions about this.
Sure.
First question is, is the UHD consortium the same group of people who decided that the unskippable thing that I needed when I put a Blu-ray disc into my Blu-ray player is an advertisement about how awesome Blu-ray is and I should totally have it?
No, I think that was the Blu-ray Disc Association.
Because whoever that is, I have a sock full of pennies with their name on it, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah, there was the Blu-ray organization that set the standards for that and how the Java subsystem would work and how it would interface and the features and so on.
Because here's the thing is, I already know about Blu-ray. That's why I bought a Blu-ray player and then bought a Blu-ray disc that will only play in a Blu-ray player. Why are you advertising to me the thing I already bought? That drives me up a wall every single time. Here's
my
second question.
It does depend on the content provider. I mean, I've got some discs where I can fast skip even through the FBI notice, and there are other discs where I have to watch their commercials and I can't skip. So it's a decision.
I've never found one that had a Blu-ray ad that I could skip. Everything with a Blu-ray ad makes me sit through it.
Well, I'm watching the Murdoch series, and that's from Acorn, and they're letting me fast forward through everything and get right to the show.
But do they have the ad that's like, Blu-ray is awesome and you should have it?
No. Nope.
Because, okay, see?
No,
nope.
They've got ads for their own Acorn content, but I can do a skip and jump right over it.
All right, so what you're saying is buy shows that Acorn is producing.
Yes. Sounds good. I'm
looking. Next question.
My next question is more of an observation that maybe has a question at the end. So we were talking about the Apple TV at my house because we were talking about revising the current thing that you plug into the television lineup in my house. So we have three televisions, and one has an Apple TV hooked up to it, the third gen. One has a Roku box hooked up to it, and a TiVo Mini now, which is sort of like the outpost for your DVR. And then the other one has a Chromecast hooked up to it. And so we were sort of looking at what sort of things, you know, if we're looking at adding a new Apple TV, what do we do with the Apple TV that we have, and sort of shuffling things around. And so Mr. Kelly was looking it up, and he looked at me horrified and went, "The new Apple TV isn't 4K."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Right." And he goes, "Why isn't the new Apple TV 4K?" And I said, "Well, it's only going to be a problem as soon as we try to hook it up to our 4K television." Oh, wait. We don't have a 4K television because we bought into all of the OMG, you need a giant flat screen, and on Black Friday, they're going to be 75% off or whatever it is. And we watched for a deal, and we upgraded our plasma to a nicer flat screen.
1080p.
And, well, obviously, we did that in like 2006 or whatever. So, I know more about TVs than any regular person really ought to. So, listeners, if you need television buying advice, let us know.
Yeah, between Kelly and John, we've got you covered.
And my advice
totally have you covered.
My advice is watch this HDR, the high dynamic range thing, because you're going to be sorry if you buy a plain Jane 4K TV this Christmas and they come out with HDR, because HDR makes a dramatic difference. And it doesn't matter how far away or how close you sit. Mm-hmm. You know, the old saw about having to, you know, sit close to a 4K TV to get the visual benefits. Mm-hmm. HDR wipes that away, and you can sit as far away as you want, and there's a dramatic improvement in the visual aspect of the picture. So that's going to be ironed out in 2016, and we'll get standards.
So my question, I guess, is how I have not closely followed sales of 4K televisions. The only reason I find it interesting that the new Apple TV does not do 4K is because I just got a phone from them that will shoot 4K video. So if I don't have a 5K iMac, what am I supposed to do with all this video? So that was my first question. But my second question is, since I don't follow sales very closely, how many people have a 4K television now who are going to look at this and who are going to look at something like the new Apple TV, which does not do 4K, and dismiss it or have some sort of concern? Because my presumption is that the Apple TV will be capable from a hardware perspective, and it's not enabled until this whole UHD thing or HDR thing, I mean, gets sorted out.
So. Well, I think iFixit pointed out, if I recall correctly, check me on this, is that they found that the HDMI output was HDMI 1.4.
Oh.
So that means we're just stuck where we are.
Yeah, and what you want is HDMI 2.0A. At least, and 2.0A. You need the A suffix to support HDR. And okay. There's different chipsets for HDR, and that's sort of like the splintering right now, so...
So maybe that's next year's Apple TV. Yeah.
Here's hoping.
They'll warm us up with this one and then upgrade us next year.
Hey, we're so out of time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we went way over.
Every time.
Yeah, we're just going to have to wrap up.
Okay.
Hey, Kelly, thank you so much for being here today.
Of course.
And John, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Yes, it was a pleasure.
it's always awesome to have
you. I can get my tongue untied here.
Good luck with that. It's always great to have both of you here. Downcast, thank you for being our sponsor this week.
Yay.
Head over to their website, downcast.fm/TDO, and check out their podcast player management app. It's really great. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.